I do appreciate prayers for having a clear mind as I was studying this lesson, and I was going over the prayer of Jehoshaphat. I started looking back where, you know, there would have been a kind of a parallel prayer that was made, only it wasn't back there. And I said, well, I know I've covered this. Why am I not finding it? Only to find out it was ahead in Hezekiah when he was king, which we haven't got to yet. But I had covered that in a lesson I taught while I was gone. So I do get things confused. And when I do, if you'll keep me straight, I'd appreciate it. Tonight we're going to talk about Jehoshaphat. So to get us started, who are the kings of Judah up to this point? Anybody want to start out with the first one? Rehoboam. Asa. Let's back up. Before Asa, we had another one. Abijam. Yeah, and then Asa. And now Jehoshaphat. So this is the fourth king. Now, how many kings have we covered from the Israel side? Quite a number, right? Yeah, we've covered several. We've covered, sixth dynasty or something like that? I forgot the count. But we've covered quite a number of kings. Okay. All right. So, here we are now with the, fourth king, under Judah. Now, some summative questions. Not asking for a lot of detail here. Just the basic information. Was Jehoshaphat's reign pleasing to God? I get a head nod. Okay, but I can't hear it. Was it? Okay, how many say yes? Two. How many say no? Oh my. Okay. All right, let me just ask some questions. Did he walk in the way of Asa, his father, or not? Yes or no? I get two yeses. Pardon?
Can we choose a different answer from the choice
you
gave?
Yeah.
How about a yes and no?
Well, if you give me a yes and no, I'm going to ask you for the verse. Which chapter are you in?
1 Kings 22:43.
Okay.
It says the high places were not taken away. People still sacrificed and burned themselves on the high places. This was a continuing problem. It was not done away until Hezekiah.
I agree with that. And we're getting there. But it say at the beginning of that verse that he walked in the way of Asa? It does say that. I'm sorry? Yes. Did he do what was right in the sight of the Lord? Pardon?
Yes.
Okay. No, we're not getting into detail. That's what I said at the beginning. We're looking at basic answers here. Okay. Did he remove the remainder of the male cult prostitutes left in the days of Asa? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Did he walk in the ways of David?
Yes.
Okay. Did he seek the God of his father? Okay. Did he walk in his commandments and not according to the practices of Israel? Okay. Was his heart courageous in the ways of the Lord? Yes. Did he remove the high places in the Asherim from Judah? Okay. Now, why did God establish his kingdom? Well, yeah, but because of what he had done, because he had done these things, because he had walked in the commandments of the Lord, okay? But now to get to Steve's point, okay, could he have done more in service to God? Okay, what could he have done?
Not by himself, but Ahab,
Okay, all right. That's the second point. The first point is that he did not remove all the high places. Now, we just read he removed the high places. But now he didn't remove all the high places, you see. Okay, remember, and it doesn't tell us in detail on these high places. Remember, some of the high places were used to worship the false gods. Some high places were used to worship Jehovah God. Perhaps it was the ones that were used to worship Jehovah God that were left standing. Later on in the reading, there was a reference made to the hearts of the people. What did that reading tell us? Had the people set their hearts to turn to serve God, or had they not? They had not. Okay. So, but not all the high places that were removed. And Steve's point about that being a continuation from Asa is true. Now, John had a second point there. And what was that second point concerning peace with the king of Israel? Okay. Now, are you referring to 1 Kings 22 and 44, Jehoshaphat also made peace with the king of Israel?
That, also, I think it's 2
Chronicles. Right.
19.
Okay. 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 And you're right. I'm just keying on the first one for right now in 1 Kings. He made peace with the king of Israel. Now, in this particular reading in 1 Kings, you may say, well, it doesn't say if it's good or bad. I associate it that God was not pleased for two reasons. One, John's comment out of the Chronicles letter. But secondly, that it's brought up after he talks about the high places not being removed, and also he made peace with the king of Israel. I see those kind of attached, especially in the context of what's written in Second Chronicles. Now, Jehoshaphat had the law of God. What did he do with it?
Had it taught to the people.
And it gives us some detail about what he had done. He sent out, not by name, but he sent officials out. He sent priests out. He sent Levites out. And they went to all the cities and taught the people. What we're going to notice is these good kings taught the law. You remember what happened in Josiah's day? Where was the law? It was lost. You remember? And see, what happened to Josiah when he found it? What did he do? What did Josiah do when the law was discovered and brought to Josiah? Did he not go into sackcloth? I think so. We hadn't got that far yet. But see, these good kings, they turned to the law. You remember what was told to Joshua? To meditate day and night upon the law of God. And that's what the good leaders were doing. And Jehoshaphat was doing that. What was the result of that? What was the result of his efforts to go through the lands and to teach the people? The Lord was with him, okay? And notice in 17 and 10, the way that the Lord was with him. Fear fell upon who? The other kingdoms around him, such that there was peace, okay? Now, we just saw his father lived in an age of peace. You know, many years of his father's reign was peaceful, you see, because of the conduct of Asa. And now we see here his son following in his footsteps. And I'll be honest with you, it's really refreshing to see a father's son. Now, we recognize at the end of Asa's life, in the last 5 years of his life, he had some issues. But it's certainly good to see two men falling together in service unto God. So the fear of the Lord fell upon the nations around them. Now, and they made no war. What was the size of the army that Jehoshaphat had? 10,000? Is that what you said? If you want to add up the numbers, you're going to get over 1 million, okay? So, yeah, you're close. Zeros don't mean anything. So, quite a large army. And we're going to see later on, you know, still where Jehoshaphat's trust was, even having a large army. Okay. Matter of fact, that's in... That's over in a later chapter, chapter 20. And, we'll get to that. Okay. It's in chapter 20 and verse 33 that, you know, where we were talking about earlier that the heart of the people. The people have not yet set their hearts upon to serve God. Okay. So what happened in chapter 18? John, you alluded to it that he'd done some things there that were not pleasing to God. What did he do at the start of chapter 18? Now, was that pleasing? How do you know?
It was prophesied, let's see what it would. 19. You help the weak now, but I'll see you in love and faith and hope.
Well, that's 19 and 2, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, but notice what it says, okay, in 19. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Yes, that comes out of the battle. But what's all this together? What have you got? You've got a marriage alliance. What accompanies these marriage alliances? Fighting against the enemies, you see. All that's combined. Okay, what else did Jehoshaphat do that was not pleasing to God?
He'll align himself with them again later on.
In what manner?
Chapter 20, verse 35.
Okay, in the matter of what? And that was with whom? He aligned himself with whom on that?
Another king of Israel.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. Second Chronicles. Right now I'm just asking some questions and some of the answers are in different parts of Second Chronicles. Basically we're in Second Chronicles 17, 18, 19, and 20. Okay, so we've got three things that was displeasing to God. The marriage alliance, the going to war, and then the building of the ships. Okay, all right. So we're going to work our way through those things as we go into the lesson. All right. In chapter 18, Jehoshaphat allies with Ahab. Who can summarize what happened?
Ahab came to him about going into battle, and he told him, my people are as your people.
Okay. All right, and then...
He inquired of the Lord.
Okay, that was after what?
After they'd already got there.
Inquiry from the Lord. By how many prophets?
Oh, it had a bunch of false prophets first.
Yeah. Yeah. 400 false prophets. Okay. So Ahab inquired of the Lord with his 400 false prophets, and Jehoshaphat says, inquire first for the Lord, word of the Lord. Evidently, Jehoshaphat realized that these prophets were not true, or he didn't recognize who they were. He was not comfortable with those prophets. And so who comes to prophesy then? Who does Ahab send for? I call it Micaiah. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Okay. And so he comes. And initially he prophesies how? Okay. And of course Ahab knows better. And because, he had already been told how he was supposed to prophesy, Micaiah was basically telling them what they wanted to hear. And when he was questioned on it, and then he tells them that, that this is by the Lord that he's going to, he will not return. Okay. And this would be the death of Ahab. So now Jehoshaphat sees and hears this. Does Jehoshaphat hear this is with God's pleasure, or is this not approved by God? Does Jehoshaphat go? Why? Well, I don't know. I don't know why he went, but it's interesting. It's interesting. Jehoshaphat asked for this prophet to come. You know, is there not a prophet of the Lord? So the prophet of the Lord comes and says, this is not pleasing to God in so many words. Yet Jehoshaphat goes anyway. Is this the power, you know, of this alliance that they've got between them? Is that what this is? I don't know, you see. But he goes. And then, you know, reading the story, Syrian started to go after Jehoshaphat. He cries out. And how was it that Jehoshaphat didn't get killed himself? The Lord helped him. That's right. You see, in chapter 18 and verse 31. And the Lord drew them away from him. Now I find this interesting. And this is my take on it. This may not be your take. But my take is that here Jehoshaphat was acting not in accordance with God's will in going on this battle, yet God helped him anyway. So it's interesting here, God's helping him did not indicate approval of what he had done. I just find that interesting. Okay. So in chapter 19, then, when Jehoshaphat returns from the battle, then Jehu comes to see him. We've already seen Jehu back in the days of Asa, when we went to Asa and encouraged him. And so now Jehu comes and he's asked him, should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Because of this, the wrath of the Lord has gone out against you. We see the displeasure of God in what Jehoshaphat did. So what happened? What happens to so many people when they get rebuked? A lot of times we see rebellion, don't we? See, what happened to Asa when he got rebuked, you see? And we've seen that with others. We saw it with Jeroboam when he got rebuked. But we don't see that with Jehoshaphat. And this is something that, you know, I see as, you know, the type of heart that he had. Notice here in the beginning of 19, after this, notice what it says in verse 4. He went out among the people from Beersheba to the hill country of Ephraim. And this is some land that they had captured and brought back them back to the Lord, the God of their fathers. Then notice what he did with the judges. What did he do? He appointed judges. And what kind of instruction did he give to the judges? Okay. What was his instruction to them? Notice in verse 6. Okay. And notice in verse 7 how he told them to conduct themselves. Fear the Lord. And let's be more specific. That's right. Be careful. There is no injustice with the Lord our God or partiality or taking bribes. In other words, you're to judge as God judges. Righteous judgment. Good way of putting. God is not partial. God is not tempted with bribes. God is fair in his judgment. And he expects these judges to judge as God would judge. Because it says in verse 6, he is with you in giving judgment. And so this idea carries on. In verse 9, thus thou shalt do in the fear of the Lord, in faithfulness, and with your whole heart. And he continues that thought, you know, through the next, you know, verse or two. Notice that he closes verse 11, deal courageously, and may the Lord be with the upright. Okay. There's two or three times the word courage is mentioned in this reading. And the way I look at from reading, the way I look at courage, it carries the idea of doing the right thing, even though the right thing may not be easy to do. And you think about that as far as a judge. There's many times giving judgment, a proper judgment, is not easy. There's too many pressures upon judges to rule a certain way. So there's a courage needed. So, you know, overcoming fear and then acting to do the right thing. So that's what I see the instruction is and how they're to conduct themselves. Any comment or question? Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Mine says courageously. Okay. Resolutely. Okay. Let's notice in chapter 20. It says armies, the Moabites, Ammonites, Midianites came up. And evidently it was a great multitude according to verse 2. Now remember that Jehoshaphat has a large army, a very large army. But it says fear came upon him. And what did he do?
They fasted and sought the Lord.
They sought the Lord. Okay. All right. So we see a person here that while he may have had a large army, where was his faith? In the Lord. Okay. Now we talked earlier about Rehoboam, how Rehoboam was established for about a period of 3 years. And it's when the Levites and the priests and people faithful to God had come down out of the northern tribes and they helped establish his kingdom, even though he had built up 15 fortified cities and had strong defenses. It goes on to, you know, we go on in that reading and we learn that the strength that they had came from the Lord. And we brought out then a lesson for us, you know, no matter what we do in trying to build up our family, you know, we do the right things financially and we send them to the best of schools and all of those things, you know, that's not where strength comes from. Our strength is going to come from our faith and trust and dependence upon God and recognition of that when problems come up in our life. So here's a problem in his life. He's got a great army. If he still has the army, I don't know how much time has passed between, you know, the time those numbers are mentioned and right here. But certainly he's got a great army and then he turns to God. Now, let's just look at what he did here if we look at the beginning of verse 3, it says he set his face to seek the Lord, proclaimed a fast. Now, look what he did in verse 4. He assembled to seek help from the Lord all the cities of people, and people came. So this was no small thing. He brought people in from all the cities in Judea, you see, brought them together. And so then he stands up before them. And notice what he declares, you know, as he prays to God in verse 6. Now, I want you to notice this prayer. He says, first off, O Lord God of our fathers, are you not God in heaven? You rule over the nations, the kingdoms of the nations, your hand of power and might. There is none able to stand you. Notice how he proclaims the greatness of God. He acknowledges who God is. He acknowledges what God has done for the people in the past, in verse 7, driving out the inhabitants of the land. And he continues this thought, and then he goes on down and he talks about themselves. Notice in verse 9, at the end of it, he says, talking about themselves, cry out to you in our afflictions and you will hear and save us. Verse 12, we were powerless against this great horde. And notice, we do not know what to do, but our eyes are upon you. You see, we're looking to you, God, for help. This is a prayer that is full of humility. And thus, God answers. And he tells them this battle is not, in verse 15, the battle is not yours, but God's. And as you read, the delivery that, God gave them, they did not have to raise a hand. God delivered this great multitude of people, over to them. I want to say to you, when you approach God in prayer, have the attitude of heart that Jehoshaphat had, a heart that recognizes the greatness of God, his position over all creation, and recognize our poor station before God, that we are helpless without him as we face the battles of life, and pray for his help, and then go forward courageously, even though what we need to do may not be easy for us. Any question or comment before we go? We talked about some things that were displeasing, you know, that Jehoshaphat had done. I want to talk with you about those things. We saw already in chapter 19 that after Jehoshaphat's rebuke, after he was rebuked for teaming up with Ahab, that he set up judges to judge the people. John brought up in chapter 20 in verses 35 through 37, where he entered into a shipbuilding arrangement with Ahaziah, a later king of Israel, and that God was not pleased with that, we see in verse 37 of chapter 20. But you notice back in 1 Kings 22 and verse 48, it says, Jehoshaphat made kings to go to Ophir for gold, but they did not go, for the ships were wrecked. Then Ahaziah, the son of Ahab, said to Jehoshaphat, let my servants go with your servants in the ships. But Jehoshaphat was not willing. I think what is being said here was that is after Eliezer in 2 Chronicles 20 came to him and said, God is not pleased. And then when Ahaziah wanted to send his men, he said no. See, I think he learned from, you know, being told. So the problem that we have is that sometimes when we make a mistake, it's not so easily recoverable. You can recover from the mistake of going to war. You can recover from the mistake of of a commercial operating operation like shipbuilding. The mistake that he could not recover from was the marriage alliance, because now you've got the marriage. Now, I had a handout that I'd given you a couple of class periods back, and that handout talks about the influence of Ahab on the kings of Judah. If you have that handout handy, I'm trying to find where I've got my own copy of it. But when you look on the right side of it, you'll see kings of Judah that were affected by their worship to Baal. To start with, there was a marriage alliance, and then Jehoram married Ahab's daughter. Then Ahaziah was king next. His mother was Ahab's daughter. And then after that, Athaliah, the woman herself, becomes queen for about 6 years or so. Later on, after Jehu comes in and tears out these idols, the idols to Baal, Ahaz comes in and rebuilds them. Manasseh worships the Baals. So there was a lot of influence that Ahab had over the kingdom of Judah. But I'll submit to you that this marriage alliance had a lot to do with it. So that's something that couldn't be undone. You know, you can undo a commercial operation. You know, you cannot go back to war with them again. But now this son is married, and this son later becomes king, and this son is now married into this other family of Ahab. There's an influence there that Jehoshaphat had lost. So marriage is important. Relationships are important. We need to make sure that the relationships we enter into are relationships that will not do us in. We could go into what? Is it 2 Corinthians 6 that talks about being unequally yoked? There was maybe this is an application of that verse. 1 Corinthians 15:33 that we're familiar with, evil companions, perhaps that, you know, has a bearing. But this was a relationship that was bigger than Jehoshaphat, and he couldn't do anything about it. Yes, Steve.
Do you recall whether it ever said Jehoshaphat married into the family of Ahab?
No. Just his son, to my knowledge.
That's interesting. Because it adds another angle that it wasn't just a woman like if he'd have married, but he was interested evidently in the favor of his son.
I tried to see about what age he was when this happened, and the best I can tell, Jehoshaphat was about 43 years old, as best I can tell. Now, that could easily be off a year or two. Looking at when he became king, and going into the ages of, you know, the two sons, and kind of backing some figures in there, but still using figures that the scriptures give, with the one assumption that the year of the alliance was also the year of the marriage and a birth being, you know, soon afterwards. So using that, he would have been about 43. Had been king about 8 years. I don't know if that's right, but it just kind of gave me some sight as to where he was, you know, in his reign and in his life. And then on the shipbuilding, I figure he was in the range of 52 to 54 years when he entered that commercial arrangement on the ship. And so it was in between there with the battle. So it started, you know, maybe in his, you know, early to mid 40s, and then on up into the early to mid 50s. There's a 10-year period where he was caught up in these three acts. But I see Jehoshaphat as a man that was willing to recover from his mistakes as best he could, turn back to God when he saw what his mistakes were. Let's go briefly to his son who ruled Jehoram, and we're going to only talk about this for a minute. Because he married into Ahab's family, you know how he walked. He did evil in the sight of the Lord. What was the big, what we'd say, crime? Just unthinkable that he did. When he became king, what did he do? Killed his brothers. Killed all of his brothers. And so I guess he was somewhat concerned about the kingship. He killed him. He made high places. He led Judah astray into spiritual whoredom. This one thing that says maybe the high places that had been torn down were those high places that were being offered to the false gods, because that's what he built, leading Judah astray. One thing is his death was horrendous. I don't know of another death like this. The God struck him with a sickness, and he was in great agony for 2 years before he died. I don't know of anybody else that was struck with a sickness and suffered in great agony for 2 years at God's doing. If you didn't read that, you can read it. And he died, it says, with no one's regret. Then his son became king, Ahaziah. Ahaziah was, still in the Ahab family. It says that his counselor was whom? Who was Ahaziah's counselor? His mother. Okay. It's so important who we seek counsel from. Remember, that's why the assembly, for us to come together and encourage one another and talk to one another and study together and such. He sought the counsel from probably the worst person in the world he could have sought counsel from. In a fight with the Syrians, it was determined that he would be killed. They were killed by Jehu. We'll talk about that in the next lesson. I want to talk just a moment about a prophet who prophesied of this time period. And that's, I say prophesied at the time period. There's some question about exactly when Joel prophesied. I've got my notes, and I put in there why I think it's pertinent to this time period. But Joel talks about a judgment, and he uses the term the day of the Lord about five times. Now, your counting, you may have done a little closer counting than what I did. But in the first three times, it looks to me like what Joel is doing is telling the people that they need to repent. They need to change. And in this change, they need to cry out to the Lord. Notice in chapter 1 of Joel in verse 15. This is the first occasion this comes up. Joel 1:15. It says, "Alas for the day, of the Lord is near." Now notice up above that, he says in verse 13, to the priest to put on sackcloth and lament. In 14 it says, consecrate a fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the elders. I want you to notice that's really what Jehoshaphat did. It's this idea of calling the assembly. We brought the people out of the cities, and he prayed unto God, cried out to God for help. That's essentially what he did in his day. And that's what God wants, you know, wanted of the people, where they would come together and beseech his name. And then Jehoshaphat's prayer that we've already talked about was one of recognizing who God is and recognizing our weakness. And then chapter 2 and verse 1 and chapter 2 and verse 11, as I study this book, I see this idea of the coming of the Lord is similar to that, a call to repentance. But it's used again a couple of more times. And notice in chapter 2 and verse 31. Now, we know Joel from the prophecy in Acts chapter 2, where Peter says, this is that. and refers back to Joel's prophecy about the Spirit being poured out upon all flesh. So we're familiar with the prophecy itself. But notice what it says in verse 31. The sun shall be turned to darkness, and the blood, moon to blood, before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. Now there's another judgment being talked about here. And it's not the judgment, that's the first three. This judgment would be upon all those who reject the Savior. This judgment is upon those who reject this outpouring of the Spirit upon the flesh of all men. Reject that, and there is no hope. Because that is the hope that God gives us. And he continues this thought even over into chapter 3. He says again in verse 15, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. And I think that again is the judgment upon, you could talk about the nations here because it lists some nations above that. But it's not the nations in the sense of the olden day judgments. It's the judgment of God upon those who reject his son. Any comment on that? Next week, then, we'll start a new lesson on Jehu. Thanks.